What we're going to be talking about tonight has to do with the availability of information. And by way of introduction, I'd like to just give a brief history of the availability of information. I'll try to bring up that slide. History of information availability. As we, most of us when we were young, had a catechism from the Reverend Hellenbrook Catechism book. In the second chapter, he deals with the Word. And he explains in there how the Lord communicated the Word in the beginning of time by revelation to the fathers, because there wasn't written language at that time. And then the fathers communicated it to their descendants by verbal language. And the longevity, many of them lived 900 years or more, their longevity facilitated this. By and by, established languages were, written language became established, and by the time of Moses, around 1500 BC, so it'd be 2500 years after the creation, we see that language is well established, and Moses is able to write. Now, he wrote the first five books, as we know, in the Bible, and Job might have been written by him, the book of Job, but it might have been written by one of Job's friends. If it was written by one of his friends, that would have been during the time of Abraham, and that would be the oldest book in the Bible. After that time, writing or communication or information was available by printed written text, but to copy it, scribes would have to copy it manually. So it was a very laborious process to propagate information. And this went on for many years. But according to the history, in the 7th century, the Chinese were using ink on carved wooden blocks. In the 13th century, the Koreans had print blocks with movable type. And then we come to the beginning of the 15th century, where block printing took place. And a few years after that, Gutenberg invented the printing press with replaceable, movable, wooden, or metal letters. In 1436, and he completed that invention in 1440. Now, this method of printing, which was facilitating an explosion of information, created not only a revolution in the production of books, but also fostered the rapid development of sciences, arts, religion through the transmission of text. So it's similar to what we've seen with the internet. So the internet's nothing new in that sense. There have been evolutions in the past where information has become much more available compared to what it was prior to that time. Now with printing, there's been many evolutions with printing since then, like the cylindrical printing presses and up to recent times. But all these methods up to this point, one had to go and get some physical entity, a document, a book, or if they wanted to communicate with a person, they'd have to go to that person to communicate. But in the past century, the development of telecommunication services, including for use for voice and fax, greatly facilitated the transmission of verbal communication and text. And now in modern times, the past 50 years, computers have become the repository of vast amounts of information. Beginning in the early 60s, the computers started talking to each other through phone lines or data lines. And that was the genesis or beginning of the internet. By the late 60s, universities and U.S. military contractors were using an intranet, for communicating amongst themselves. But it wasn't until the 80s that what we know as the internet today became commercialized. And that grew rapidly in the 90s. And this, coupled with computers becoming much more easier to use, caused this capability to be used by the masses because it became very friendly or very easy to use. Now, what is the internet? For a lot of you, it's obvious as you're close to it. For some of you, it's maybe somewhat mysterious. Simply put, it's a computer phone network or highway by which one can travel from one computer to many other computers throughout the world. And one can communicate by that means, or one can also obtain information. Or like you see in the slide here, it's a highway to a giant library and shopping mall. You might hear the term used tonight about the World Wide Web or the web. A web is just simply a document that resides on a computer that can contain text, multimedia, videos, but the internet enables one to communicate with many computers to obtain this various information or to use the network with the computers as an electronic post office. We could also liken it to a highway system. During the mid-50s, the interstate system was planned. That was another quantum leap in getting around by vehicles. And one can take roads to churches, to schools, to libraries, and also to undesirable places, theaters, porn shops, and so forth. Well, it's the same with the internet. You can go to very desirable places and very undesirable places. And what's particularly of concern here, and the danger is, what now will be the focus of tonight, is how this can impact children, because it's much easier now to get to information that's undesirable. And there's ways in which one can deal with that. The internet, though, is just one aspect of multimedia, because multimedia will include radio, television, videos, and what gets transmitted. Music is a big thing, as Reverend Vogelaar mentioned, all the things that he referenced. The modern technology has facilitated that. And just as the evolution in information availability since the beginning of time, this unprecedented capability of the internet also has had a big impact on society, individuals, and churches. It can be very time-consuming, and it can be very addicting to it at the expense of one addressing their duties, also seeking the one thing needful. Here we can see a device of the devil. It can create permanent scars because one can see and hear, just like with television. And it has also become a necessary skill for the workplace. Very few jobs now are available where one can get and not know how to use a computer and the internet. But there's also responsibility. We can protect our children from the internet. But yet when they get on a job, the employer will not. They can download anything they want. And if they download undesirable things, such as pornography, they will be fired. I know one company a few years ago that fired 10 people for this. And I've heard of other cases where they fired others. They do monitor their firewall. And they watch very carefully, especially this day, because I just was told by one IT department in Virginia, by Washington, that the Chinese are trying to steal inventions from American companies so they don't have to invest the R&D. So they're monitoring what's coming and going through their firewall continually. So our children have to learn to be very responsible, even when no one supposedly is watching them. Our presentation tonight then will deal with this, and I would like to at this time turn it over to Ryan Knibbe, who's going to talk about internet dangers and filters. Ryan.
Okay, hopefully I can get this close enough that you can hear. One of the things I was just thinking about as Alderman Sweden was talking about eye-gate and ear-gate is I was reading Thomas Watson, and he said that God gave to us two things, and that was the word and the sacraments, right? One was for eye-gate, that was the sacraments to see, and the other was for ear-gate. And you can see the devil is using the same things to fight against it. Just something I thought about just now. But my part of the topic tonight talks about three different subjects. First one is the dangers of the internet. One of our goals tonight was to encourage you in not a fearful way, but in a way to convince you that there is real danger and we can't close our eyes to it. And also to give some general filter information, but especially specific filter information, because we've all heard internet needs to be filtered, and the next question is always, how, right? And we're going to try to give some of that information tonight. At the end of the slideshow, there's some action items that is also in your packet. The last three or four slides are action items. We'll go over those. And then there's also a page of links that have specific step-by-step instructions for every one of those action items, okay? Now, the links are in a typed format, obviously, in your handout. If you sign up for an email address, we will send you all this information so that you can just click on those links, okay? It'll be a little easier than typing them out. So we all know the dangers or the benefits of the internet for finding information, communicating with others. It's been a real eye-opener to us on the committee to see the evil that's really available. And even more concerning is how often that evil pops up unintentionally in front of us and also our children. Part of our goal tonight is, like I said, to convince you of the seriousness of that danger to us and our families. The first challenge with the internet is that it's universally available. Okay, it's pretty much every location you're at, even here at school. Right now, if you checked your phone, you'd see there's two wireless networks. So libraries, coffee shops, at our homes, many places the internet's available. It's sometimes surprising to people how many electronic devices can access the internet. I'm going to put this in my pocket here. Obviously, computers and laptops can connect to the internet, but also smartphones. There's listed there a couple different types of smartphones, tablets, gaming devices even can have access to the internet. And even, I don't know if you knew that, but many music players, actually MP3 players like an iPod Touch, is basically a full smartphone without the phone. So you have a browser, you can go on the internet, you can do many things with it. We have many samples of those up tonight. At some point afterward also, we can come up and get a little more specific with some of those items. One of the biggest threats we have to face on the internet is pornography. One study found that 90% of children 8 to 16 have viewed pornography, and most of them unintentionally. Another study shows that 20% of 10 to 17-year-olds have been approached online by a predator, a person trying to harm them. Another study talked about how much information is accidentally accessed, and also that a good percentage of them, of those children, never tell their parents. We tend to only think of children when we think of internet dangers, but pornographic internet obsession is causing significant marital problems. One study by a group of lawyers showed that 56% of divorce cases involved a spouse with this problem. How many of our marriages are already affected? Sexting is a term coined recently to describe sending explicit pictures, usually of minors, with a cell phone. I hope to cover this a little bit more in the next slide about legal dangers. There's also much evil information freely available online relating to occult, devil worship, witchcraft, and other soul-destroying religions. There are many legal dangers you should know about, and one of the scariest is the legal danger relating to sexting. This past December, there was a case at the Portage Hills Northern School that was investigated by the police. If your child requests a picture from a friend that's explicit, they could be guilty of a felony with a 20-year jail sentence and a $100,000 fine. Michigan has a unique set of laws where the legal code applies to everyone. It doesn't discriminate between minors and adults. Forwarding a picture would get you 10 years in jail and a $50,000 fine. Just possessing it, having it on your device, your phone, your laptop, any device, could be 4 years and a $10,000 fine. Most people are saying that even for juveniles, the reality is they would get a felony on their record and they would get be added to the sex offenders list for a minimum of 10 years. Another danger is social media, which is often used for bullying. People post embarrassing pictures. Sometimes they Photoshop the pictures. They're not even real pictures. They put people in unreal environments or things that didn't happen. They also post untrue information about others. It's a way to really humiliate others. Another danger with social media is posting personal information. So many of our young people have no concept of privacy. They post everything, and they also post it to their public profile so everyone can see it, even thieves. The next danger we want to talk about was time wasting and misuse of the internet. There's a host of information available online, as you all know. Much of it is very addicting and time-consuming. Is it a good use of our time? Gaming is also a great time waster. While there may be some educational games out there, many of them cause violent behavior, separation from reality, and addiction. Social media is obviously a large topic. In short, we just wanted to list some of the major social media sites: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat are recently becoming common ways to share photos. I wanted to mention two concerns with social media. Again, privacy, but also photos. Personal information shared on a public profile is available to everyone, even thieves. I encourage you to search for your name once in a while on Google, and you'll be surprised what you find. With the photo side of things, some Facebook members post very explicit photos for their public profile. Facebook tries to limit this, but your child may stumble on these pictures because all those public profiles are available to all Facebook users. Now I'd like to transition to filtering the internet. Just some general things here. And again, if I go too fast, raise your hand. We're going to get into some more specifics, and then you may want to stop me. We have a responsibility as a parent to protect our children from the dangers on the internet. A filter is a critical part of this protection. We even have a responsibility for our own safety as adults. We wouldn't build a deck without a railing, and so we shouldn't have internet without a filter. I want to give just one example of our responsibility. One Sunday afternoon, I lost track of my cell phone. Couldn't find it for a while, and all of a sudden I suspected my 4-year-old son. Sure enough, I found it under his pillow. Looking at the history of use, it showed that he had found some games to play while he was taking his Sunday afternoon nap. It's just a reminder to all of us, and it's in the action items also, make sure all your devices have a password lock screen so your kids can't grab your phone and use it without you knowing it. The one thing we don't want you to do is leave tonight thinking, well, I have a filter, so I don't need to worry about it anymore. Filters are not 100% effective. In fact, 70% is probably a good estimate for the best filter out there. Most good filters and some standalone programs will use logs to track activity online, and they'll even send, some of them will even send a report periodically to an accountability partner through email. This accountability can discourage any curiosity to click on a questionable link. Accountability is probably the most foolproof solution for discouraging misuse, especially also for adults. Ultimately, the best protection is a multiple-level approach, using accountability, parental controls, filtering, and time limits. And we'll talk about all those tonight. There are two main types of filters that we want to talk about tonight. The first is a connection-based filter, or a router-based filter. It filters the internet as it comes into your home. Now, what I'm going to do is I'll finish going through this, and then I want to show you some examples so you can visually see one. It basically acts as a splitter or a traffic controller. So it allows devices to connect either by plugging into it or wirelessly. Filters can be sometimes added to an existing router if you have one at home, or you can purchase a router that has the filtering built into it. This type of filter works really well in a home that has multiple computers and devices, as it can filter all those devices at once. Software filters are programs that are installed on each device. They filter the internet that's used only on that device. This type of filter is important for portable devices, like a laptop that can be used outside of the home, at a library, coffee shop, something like that. It can be also important if other sources of internet are available. I don't know how many of you will notice that if you're at home, a neighbor's internet network will show up. Some people don't lock their internet network, so it's available. So if your child's at home and can connect to the neighbor's internet, obviously it's probably not going to be filtered. And another example is most smartphones can share their internet connection through a wireless hotspot. And again, that wouldn't be filtered, and it could be available in your home. One of the things, examples we wanted to use tonight is a water filter system. Okay? Now, my son likes to play on SketchUp. SketchUp's a program where you can draw things in 3D. So what we wanted to use as an example, and I said, Ben, draw this up for us. So this here, I'm going to turn this way. This here is a what we would call a router filter. And many of you maybe have this in your home. It's considered a whole house filter. So where the water comes into your house, you're filtering every bit of water that comes into the house. So imagine you know that the water system has some poisons in it. You don't know when they're going to come, but they may come into your water, and we want to make sure we're filtering it out. So we start with a whole house system so that everything past that filter is being filtered. So that's a router-based filter. From there, we can install individual filters on each spigot, okay? And in this case, a spigot might be an iPod or an iPad, a computer, or a cell phone. And these little blue filters are kind of examples of a software filter. So when we talk about connection, we're talking about everything in the house. And when we're talking about software, we're talking about on each device. Now, the other thing to remember is, again, There's other sources, obvious, of internet besides your source at home. So the software filters will help with that. And I like to compare that to a water bottle. Okay, so if you have a water bottle, you can take that obviously anywhere and fill it with water. So they do actually make a filtered water bottle. So that would be an example of a software filter, again, if you're filtering your portable device. So no matter how you fill it, it's being filtered. The next slide, we're going to talk about features. There are several features you should look for in a filter. Many of you already have filters. I encourage you to look for these features in your filter. Number one, make sure you have separate user accounts. User accounts will allow you to set different settings for younger children than for adults. A good filter will also have accountability logs. A really good filter will email those logs, because the challenge with accountability logs is if nobody remembers to check them, they're probably not effective. Time constraints allow you to limit the time the internet's available. Filters will allow you to block out, for example, nights or Sundays. Make sure you try to get a filter that works on all the devices and computers that you have. If you do that, your reporting and your controls and your settings are all on one page versus trying to go to each device to try to make changes to settings. Obviously, a good filter shouldn't be easily disabled and bypassed. And the easiest way to know if your filter's easily disabled or bypassed is to Google it. How do I bypass and whatever your filter name is? A whitelist is a list of allowed websites, so websites that can be accessed. Most filters will allow you to create your own list of websites and then limit a specific user to only access those websites. So you may want to set up a computer that has Moodle and PowerSchool and the Plymouth Christian website or something on it, and then just allow your children to access those websites. Most websites are given a label that filters use to decide whether to allow that website or to block it. For example, foxnews.com might be labeled as a news site and be allowed based on your filter settings. However, on a certain day, there may be a news article with some objectionable content on it. A good filter will use a technique called dynamic filtering. This is where the filter actually scans every word on the page and decides whether that page should be blocked or allowed. This means that a page on a news site may be blocked on one day due to its content and another day allowed because the content has changed. Take a look at the list of common web pages listed there. Most of those web pages wouldn't be blocked based on a filter category. However, there is actually much objectionable content on every one of those websites, and some of that can be blocked using dynamic filtering. Now we get to the recommendations. You'll also see in your slide, too, a little bit of a disclaimer. We on the committee have had some personal experience. We've tested each of these filters at home. They were also very highly rated on several other studies from other churches of our background. That being said, we didn't do an extensive testing of their filtering capabilities. We more focused on what features they had and how easy they were to use, and kind of went on the recommendations of other groups. So for connection-based filters, we're recommending both the iBoss or the SkyDog router. Both of them would replace your current router, and they both have filtering built into them. So at this point, I'm going to quick show you a picture of a router. Turn this light on a minute here. So this actually is an example of the iBoss filtered router. Okay, it's just a little square white black box. It has a black antenna on it. Okay, that's for your wireless. The easiest way to always determine if it's a router is to look at the number of plugs in the back, and they look like phone jacks. Okay, and you can think of in and out. So blue is internet going in, yellow is internet going out. So a router is able to take one internet stream and divide it between multiple devices, and they can either be plugged into those yellow jacks, or they can connect through the black antenna on the top. Now you also may have in your house what is called a modem. Okay, this is an example of a modem. It's an older DSL modem, but it's an example of a modem. The way you can identify a modem is there's only two jacks, one in and one out. So one is your feed from the internet company, and the second is your feed out to a computer. Now, to make it even more tricky, most of your internet service providers, and I don't have an example of one, have a combined unit. So it has the internet coming in, and the router's built into the device. Okay, those type of units are a little bit harder to filter, and in most cases, you may have to bypass it and actually replace it with another router, which is easily done. You can disable the router that's there. I'm going to switch back to the PowerPoint a minute. For the software-based filters, we're recommending NetNanny and K9. You can see on there the little bit of pricing difference. Both of them are good filters. Remember, they need to be installed on every device. So each device needs to have that software installed. NetNanny is a better solution for multiple devices, as all your settings can be changed from an online web page. NetNanny is a little more time-consuming because you'd have to install it on each device, and then you can only change the settings actually on the device. So you'd have to go to the device, you can look at logs, you can change settings, but you have to physically have the device in your hand to make those setting changes. Now you're probably thinking, aren't there any other good filters? Yes, there's a lot of other good filters out there. Here's a couple that we looked at in our studies. We didn't test these per se. The one I specifically wanted to talk about is OpenDNS, as I think some of you, maybe many of you already have it or are using it, and I want to make a couple things clear about it. It's a free router-based system. Basically, it allows you to take your existing router, if your router has the capability, and direct all the traffic from that router through OpenDNS's servers. It requires some technical knowledge to be able to log into your router and make some changes to what they call DNS server settings. It also requires that one computer is left running all the time with a program running on it that keeps your IP address up to date. And a third thing is, it requires that all devices on your network don't have modifiable DNS settings, because if you have a laptop and you can manually set the DNS settings on the laptop, it'll bypass the router. It won't filter it. Now, obviously, if you don't understand what IP addresses are or what DNS servers are, you probably shouldn't be using OpenDNS. There's a pretty big challenge with mobile devices. First of all, we should probably start with the basics. There are four types of main mobile devices. Really, they're operating system, but let's call them devices to make it simple. The most common are Android or Apple or what's called iOS. The other two less common are BlackBerry and Windows Phone. Software or programs on these devices are called apps. So I'm going to be using apps a lot. So it's just a program that's on the device. Unfortunately, mobile devices are complicated, if not impossible, to reliability filter. There are filter apps that are available. They tend to be unstable. They tend to be easily disabled. Also, some cell providers will offer actually filtering from the cell phone company. It's very limited in what devices it works with. And obviously, it's very limited in flexibility. They have three settings, 12-year-old, 15-year-old, 17-year-old, something like that. And what Verizon thinks is good for a 12-year-old is probably very different than what we would think. I would also recommend, in your handout with the links, there's a very nice report done by the RCNA Church in Chilliwack, and they gave us permission to share that, where there's a summarized version of it in your packet. The full version, there's a link to it in the links page. They spent a lot of time investigating filters and actually doing some data studying on it. And they came to the conclusion that they couldn't even find a foolproof way to make mobile devices safe. We have some recommendations tonight because we want to at least give you some guidance in that way. First step is accountability. There are some apps that are available. We've got two of them there we're recommending, Covenant Eyes and Finamo. Again, these are apps that log what happens on the phone, what websites are gone to, and then communicate them to a partner. An app locker is actually a program that locks other programs from being used. In other words, most devices come with an app called YouTube, and it directly links you to YouTube where you can watch videos. Well, if you install an app locker, you can disable YouTube, so you need a password to use that application. An app locker is often needed along with a filter app on a phone to disable any other browser apps that are on the phone that would allow them to use or bypass the filter. Also, I want to make sure you're aware of hotspots or what's called tethering. Tethering is maybe a little older term, but hotspot is basically where most smartphones today have an internet connection through cell phone towers, and that internet connection can be shared with wireless. So basically, your phone turns into a router which shares internet with anybody that it allows to connect to it. Typically, in most cases, that internet that's shared is not filtered. Even though there's a browser installed on the phone that's filtered, the internet's being shared without going through that filter. Here are some tips, somewhat in general, but our first one I think is pretty important. It's very complicated to make a mobile device safe. We feel it's unsafe to give a smartphone to anyone under the age of 18. Older children need smartphones. Here are some tips that we recommend. Number one, again, is accountability. Make sure you know what they're doing. And again, communicate to them that you are watching these reports so that they know that if they misuse it, that you'll be notified. Install the app locker. Make sure you block out apps that are dangerous, have content on it that you don't approve of. And also block installing new apps so they can't just install a different app other than the one that you blocked. Make sure to spend time to review the apps. Once in a while, ask your child to look at their phone and just look at what applications are on there. Use time limits to, in a filtering app or accountability app, many of them have time limits you can set up to disable internet usage at night or on Sundays. And then make sure that your settings and browsers are locked out or disabled so that if there is a filtered browser, that they can only use that browser. At this point, I'll turn it over to Brad, who will cover some computer tips.
Okay, so in addition to just plain having a filter, is this loud enough? Okay. There's a few other things that we would like to cover that can supplement the function of a filter. And the first one that we want to talk about here is safe search. So like Ryan was saying, when you have an internet connection filter, everything that's coming in through the internet or into the home is being filtered or onto the device. But if you would go to, let's say, Google or Bing or any other search engine, which might be common, I prefer Google, and it seems to be the most common one out there. A filter has a very difficult time doing anything with what the search engine gives you, right? So if I go to Google and I type in, any kind of search, any one of those search terms could come back, and I would have results on that. So I could have offensive material. But a filter has a very difficult time of reading any of those results and blocking those. If I would click on a result, then I could obviously go to the web page, and the filter would then kick in and block that information. What Safe Search does is it's actually telling the search engine to filter the results that it provides to you, right? So a classic example is if I am looking for a recipe for a chicken breast, right? So if I have Safe Search enabled, Google is going to basically filter out any adult content that could come along with that search. So I have a demonstration here just to show you that there is an ability to lock Safe Search. And that's the story of my life. Okay, well, there is in the links document, and sorry about that. I don't have an internet connection at the moment. In the links document, there's a link in there so that you can go to a website that's going to give you instructions on how to lock Safe Search. Because obviously, if I as a parent lock down Safe Search for my account, if my kids go on with my Android tablet, they could go to Google, sign in with my account, and then they could turn it off, and then they would still not be protected. So there's that information in the links document. An important point regarding filters, I'm sorry, around search engines, is it's probably a best practice to choose a search engine that you're going to use, and then many filters have a functionality where you can turn off all other search engines. So it's block everything except for I'm going to use Google only, and then I can go in and enable Safe Search. And a note around Safe Search on Google, anyways, is it applies to all services that they provide. So it goes to YouTube, Google Plus, their search, and any other service that they might provide. Second, individual user accounts on computers. So there's a lack of awareness for a lot of people that I meet, especially around work, that when you buy a computer from the store and you just install Windows 7 or Windows 8, whatever, the account that you set up, Windows doesn't indicate to you that you're going to be the administrator. So it just says, give me your name, you type in your name, and then that username becomes the administrator. So on a family computer, that can be a danger, right? Because an administrator has full access to the computer. They can install any software they would like, uninstall software. If I put a filter on there, my kids could go in there and uninstall it. So the best way to get around that is by creating individual user accounts for all the users of the computer. And then I'm going to talk about in a couple of points how to lock down the administrator account. And again, in the links document, there's some information on how you set up those users. Parental controls is another, and what we talk about in the IT industry is defense in depth. It's a concept of don't rely on any individual software or device to protect you. So protect everything coming into the house. Make sure that we do something on the computer to protect ourselves and use many different functions to help protect from many angles, right? Parental controls started out in Windows 7, which is probably the most common operating system in use right now. Windows XP, hopefully not many people are using that anymore. Windows 7, the parental controls are very limited. They're out there. You can basically set a game rating in case your kids get a hold of some games off the internet. Very limited. It's helpful. Windows 8 makes it much better, and it actually includes a web filter, and it also ties over to your Microsoft account. So you can set it up on the computer, and then you can set up reports. So all the internet activity from the computer, you can also get straight from Microsoft. And Windows 8.1, which is what I'm using on my laptop, that's even better. Dave would probably know much more about family controls on Mac, but apparently that's also built into Mac. And the advantage there is, obviously this is a work laptop, and the majority of my time I'm using it outside the home. So when I'm inside the home, I'm protected by my filter. When I'm outside, I need to rely on something on the computer. So that's kind of a, again, defense in depth. I've got two different ways, right? When I leave my house, I've got a filter on the computer, so it follows. Ryan also talked about time constraints. The majority of filters nowadays come with that ability built right in. And he also mentioned whitelist, and I think pretty much everybody understands what a whitelist is, just a list of websites that you're allowed to go to. Everything else is blocked, so you can be very deterministic on how your children are able to use the internet. There are some downsides to this. You're not able to search, right? So here at school, we actually employed a whitelist for many years, and I think it's still in place for the elementary. You can, let's say, NASA.gov, a few other government websites, maybe Encyclopedia Britannica and a few others, right? I think there was maybe 40 or 50 websites. So you can go to individual websites, but if my daughter is researching for some kind of project, you can go to the individual websites, and hopefully they have a search function on those websites, but you're not able to search everything that's on that whitelist, right? So then the challenge is, if you enable Google, now you're able to search the entire internet, right? So just awareness items that whitelists are quite limited. Another idea that we discussed as a committee is the use of split passwords for administrator accounts. And the idea there is, if we look at just a computer and there's an administrator account that has full access, but it's a it's a family computer, if I type in half the password and my wife types in half the password, nobody is ever able to get into that computer and uninstall software, right? So it's kind of a team effort. It's husband and wife, whatever. You're both in there. Everybody, or at least you have accountability on everything that happens on the computer. And the same thing goes with filters. So Ryan was showing this iBoss. I happen to have a SkyDog at home, and we do the same thing. I type in half the password, my wife types in half the password, right? Or if I have a K9 web filter or Covenant Eyes on my computer, same thing, right? So I'm never able to uninstall that software when I'm away from the house. Then I install it and bring it back in, and everything looks like it's normal, right? And then the last subject that we wanted to talk about is browser history. And really it's about... I mean, it's very popular. People go into the internet history and, you know, get a good feeling of, I know what my kids are doing. The problem there is, in recent years, I want to say going on maybe five years ago, all the browsers came up with this incognito or in-private browsing modes. And really what that does is, under normal circumstances, when I open up Chrome or Internet Explorer, everything that I do, all the websites that I go to, are being logged, right? And then I can go into the history and I can see a list. Incognito, and incognito is the browsing mode in Google Chrome. In private browsing is Internet Explorer, and private browsing is Firefox, which are the three most common browsers. Basically what that does is I can do whatever I want on the internet, and there is no history. There's no temporary internet files. There's no trace whatsoever on the computer. So the example of Naughty Johnny understands what that is, and he's browsing the internet. There's no trace, right? So that's where we have stressed in the past, and what Ryan was talking about as well, is don't depend on this browsing history. Have some sort of accountability software installed on the computer. Make sure that we're checking the accountability or the accountability reports that we get emailed from our router-based systems. And also the last point I want to make is the, I think in the handout and I think also on the links page, there's a program out there, and I would recommend that we all do this. You can download a very small program. When you run it, there's three buttons. And it's basically disable incognito, disable in private browsing, and disable private browsing. So it's a single program that will disable that feature in all three browsers. Okay? So it's a very handy way of being able to say that I don't ever have to worry about my kids going into that mode. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dave. Yes. It depends on the software that you're using. A whole house filter, because the request leaves the computer and it goes through the router is always able to see that. There are some filters that are installed on the computer that are not able to detect and pick up what happens in incognito mode. So, great question. Thank you. You know, I don't even remember what the name of it is. Yeah, it's on the links page. Was that printed out?
Yes. In the last
video. Is it? Okay. Yeah, in the Q&A section, I'll make sure I grab a copy and point that out.
Okay, we thought that it would be worthwhile for parents to understand how the high school and elementary schools filter and control their internet access for students. The elementary school uses a whitelist, and we referenced what that means earlier, but essentially the students are allowed to access a specific list of websites that have been approved by the elementary school administration. The high school, it allows students to access the web generally, but they use a two-layered or a two-tiered filtering system similar to what we've been recommending for home usage. They use a blacklist to block access to all inappropriate websites right off the bat. And secondly, they use dynamic filtering to filter any content that is deemed acceptable for students. But in case the content does change, the dynamic filter will block that. The administration in the high school also has the ability to access a list of sites that have been accessed by students. So they have access to a report
that shows what sites students have been using. And I've been told that they're looking at improvements to that process, to the reporting process, which would allow the administration to view which pages have been accessed on a particular website. For instance, YouTube. There may be educational videos on YouTube, but there's also inappropriate material that might not be filtered, but they can see that information in a report and take action as needed. The computer lab administrator, Bill Kochman, is also able to use his workstation in his office to remotely view the screens in the computer lab. So he can also keep tabs on what students are doing at any particular time and take action if necessary. Okay, we also thought we would try to briefly summarize some of the items contained in the school policy handbook regarding technology. And this, the current handbook contains a list of prohibited uses of the school's technology services, and most of these items are obvious, such as forbidding access to obscene and offensive materials. They also talk about students using the school network to stalk or electronically harass people. Third item that I noticed was students are also asked not to make online purchases using school equipment. And any attempt by students to disable or hack the school network or systems on the network, including the internet filtering and controls, would be considered a violation of school rules. But again, you might want to review that list in the handbook. Regarding portable devices, the handbook allows cell phones to be used at school only during breaks. During the rest of the school day, the phones must be off. All other devices, that would be cell phones, or I'm sorry, MP3 players, tablets, CD players, iPods, may not be on school property, on buses, or at school functions, except by permission of the administration. That's a quote out of the handbook. Additionally, laptops or student laptops may be used if approved by administration and only for educational purposes. The handbook also includes some guidelines for general internet usage, which families might find useful to review with their children and also to think about for themselves as adults. First, when you're putting together an email or an instant message, be polite and try to understand how your communication might be understood by the receiver. We have to realize that the person receiving the email or text message can't read your mind or see your facial expressions. Sometimes things are misinterpreted, and that can cause problems. Secondly, use appropriate language. This is probably obvious. Obviously, we shouldn't be using profanities or offensive terms, but be careful in your choice of words so we can avoid misunderstandings. Thirdly, be confidential. Do not give out passwords, and be very careful as to who you share personal information with. And this has been touched on before, but don't post other people's pictures or their personal information or any of their information without their permission. Be discreet. Remember, there are no guarantees of privacy, so be very careful about what you send as a message or post on a website, because once it's out there, that could be searched and reviewed by a potential future employer. Fifthly, be honest. If you're using online materials or resources in a school project or a personal project, check the licenses and terms of use and give credit to your sources. And lastly, be discerning. If your child stumbles onto something inappropriate or offensive or obscene, they should notify yourself as a parent, or if they're at school, a faculty member, as soon as possible, so that measures can be taken and put in place to prevent this incident from reoccurring. And I would also emphasize that these types of incidents should be kept confidential so that children and students feel willing and open to discuss these things with their parents or teachers without the possibility of embarrassment or public shame. Now, Dan Engelsma will give some practical guidance.
Okay, if we look at the slide up in front of us here, I have a question. Would you leave the following on your kitchen table and tell your children, don't try this or be very careful with this? Just hit all of them, that's fine. Go to the bottom of the slide. So I put on here three examples, tobacco, alcohol, and drugs. Okay, so we have open cigarettes, we have a fifth of whiskey, we have drugs, let's go a step further. We have a magazine with some nasty pictures in it. We put them on the table and then we leave them and we say to our kids, be careful. You see where I'm going with this? When we started on our committee, we all learned a lot. We all taught each other because we all had our own goggles on. We all saw the world through our own eyes. We didn't realize how big of a problem we had. And every meeting we had, we learned more. But with that internet, I think we were all staggered by what's out there. And so, if I ask you to raise your hands, and I'm not going to make you do that, of how many of you have unfiltered internet at home, I think we might be shocked. The part that probably grieves me the most, that I came home so discouraged from one meeting, is Ryan already touched on it, but cell phones, smartphones, you know, and we're all hypocrites, right? Because I tell the kids not to use them, but I have it for business. We really can't do much. And we'll address that in a moment. That's the part that probably fills me the most with fear. You know what I really think most of us are doing? I put myself in that category. I don't see it. Do I really know what my 21-year-old daughter's doing? No. She's so far above me that I can't even begin to understand it. That's the part that fills me with fear. So for all these years, I've been just kind of backing up because I didn't understand it. This committee opened my eyes. I'm responsible. And you're responsible. And maybe before you leave tonight, if we make that impression upon you, that's really the goal, I think, of tonight, because there's so much information. We don't want you to go out of here totally overwhelmed. Okay, Dave. What we did is came up with some scriptural texts that, where do you start and where do you stop? But we came up with some general topics. We started with temptation, and then we started with a text out of Corinthians, wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Then we went to Jeremiah, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Next, Dave, the danger of things done in secret. I emphasize that word, secret. Stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant, but the dead are there. Avoiding temptation, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour. Exposure to evil is harmful to your soul. Out of Peter, for that righteous man, talking about Lot, dwelling among them and seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with unlawful deeds. Matthew, I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust, you can read the rest. And then we get Daniel. But Daniel proposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. And then Psalm 101, I will set no wicked thing before my eyes. This last slide that I have here is really, it's all common sense, but I'm talking to myself. We heard this evening, the first one here is spending time with our children. We live in a world that is blasted with music, is blasted with video pictures. How many families today have supper every night together? How many families have devotions every night together? How many families eat together at all, whether it's breakfast or supper? I guess that's the part of, I look at how I was born and raised, and I look at where we are today. Are we playing games with our kids in the backyard? Are we playing games with our kids on Friday night, whether it's a board game or whatever? There is a generation gap. They got much worse, and we'll address that in a moment. But what are we doing to build character in our kids? You know, my little kids, grandkids, are just like Ryan was talking about his little boy. If I leave my phone on that table for 2 minutes, they know more about my phone than I do. They can figure it out at 5 years old. And that doesn't build character. What built character in us as parents and grandparents? Tough going. When Dad put you out in the barn, or if you were not raised on a barn, it was learning how to do something. Building a go-kart. Even though you built it out of all wood and you hit the first wood bump and it fell apart, you learned something from it. You don't learn that with a video game. That's the part that fills me with fear. The next one is filter the entire network. Ryan hit that one, so we don't have to go about that one. No personal information given out. And then the sharing of passwords. I happen to know that 5 kids are friends. They all know each other's passwords. So they go on each other's Facebook accounts. And they don't mean any harm by it. Oh, did you know this? And all of a sudden, we have 25 kids that know that password. And so they're getting into each other's Facebook, and where is it going to go if the wrong person gets into that Facebook? That fills me with fear. Okay? The other thing is we have 2 email accounts, or 4 email accounts. Dad and Mom see the one they want them to see. The other ones, you don't see them. But they have them. And they've got all kinds of communication going on that you're clueless about. The next one is accountability and awareness. And Ryan hit that. I think I leave that with probably the most important one. Accountability and awareness. That's the thing I think that I fall back to. If we cannot be accountable to God first, and then the second part is awareness. Let's not bury our head in the sand. What are you doing as parents? What am I doing as grandparents? You see, my kids are almost gone. I have one home yet. But now I'm concerned about my grandkids because they're not in the house 2 minutes and they want to ask Grandma and I if they can play on the computer, a computer game or whatever it is. So now I've got another fear is okay, I got my kids out of the house, but now I've got to worry about my grandkids. And what kind of protection do I have for my grandchildren? The home layout. I've done quite a bit of reading on that, and you can do the same thing. People today are designing their house around computers. Now, when I say computers, you know, in my day, there were no computers. When I brought my kids up, it was one old computer that you didn't have internet access. Today, it's how many electronic devices do you have in your house? We talked about them. Maybe some houses have 10, 12, 15 of them. Where are they? Do you even know where they are? Once they go in the bedroom, do you have any accountability? Do you know what they're doing in that bedroom? Let me challenge you to something. When you were 16, 17 years old, and you had that availability and you can go in your bedroom, Dad can't see you, Mom can't see you, I'm filled with fear, friend. I still don't trust myself. At our work, we use Covenant Eyes. Ryan talked about that. Every Monday morning, one of my partners gets an email to them of exactly where I went that was questionable. So if I go to Fox News and I read a news article that has the word sex in it, alert goes up. And it goes to my accountability partner and says, Dan looked at an email or looked at a news account. It was Fox News and it had this word in it. And it makes you think. You know, what percentage do you think of high school kids have smartphones? You might be shocked. And how many parents, you heard what Ryan said, you can't lock those things down. You think you do, but we went and did surveys and talked to just about every single one of our churches, every single one of our schools. And they're all fighting the exact same thing we are. Some of them are behind. They don't really have a whole lot of committee work doing this kind of work. The church that we found out that was the furthest ahead was, what was the name of that church, Dave? Reformed Congregation of North America. It's not our denomination. It's in Chilliwack. They probably are the furthest ahead we found as far as having a website, and they did a lot of homework, as Ryan addressed. So when we talk about the home layout, put the computers in a place that there's accountability, family accountability. Because if your daughter or son's in the bedroom for 3 hours at a time, and they have a device, how do you know what they're doing? They can get a movie and download a movie on Amazon. How do you know they are? They have their own debit card or they have their own credit card. I don't know. I don't know the answer other than put them all in the living room or put them in a family room or accountability. And I know it's going to be difficult because the little thing that fits in your pocket, how do you know where that is? The Sunday one, I know these young people what they're doing. You do too. They take their phone to bed with them. It's underneath their pillow so they can hear the text coming in the middle of the night. It's a different generation, my friend. That's just the way it is today. Why not when they're young, they all go on dad and mom's dresser in the bedroom. Saturday night, it's the policy in our house. I'm not saying I have this. Mine's 21 years old. It's a little late for me. But you young parents, I beg of you, take all those devices. What does a young person need a cell phone for on Sunday? I'd like to know that. I don't understand why they need one. I don't need one. I don't know why you'd have to have a cell phone or some other electronic device on. I'm afraid that most of our young people do, and I think they're in church, and I think texting is going on in church. That's how far I'm going to go. And that really fills me with fear. And the last one there, John Van Sweden, Mr. Van Sweden, started our first committee meeting with reading Daniel 12. And I thought, what is he reading Daniel 12 for? And then he came to the verse, "But thou, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." That last sentence. And that's what John emphasized. That's what set the tone for our committee. We have more knowledge, but do we have wisdom? And I'd like to leave you, don't have this little thing on your slides, I'd just like to leave you with a little story. What's a teacher without a story? And my story is about two brothers who were on a farm. It wasn't the Van Dyke farm, but it was a farmer where the boys all worked together, the two boys did. It was an older and a younger boy. I don't even know if the story is probably not even close to being true, but it gets a point across. And the two brothers worked and shared goods, they shared labor. One day, the younger brother got upset with the older brother, and he said, "I'm done." And he diverted a creek so that nobody could drive a tractor across, and there'd be no communication. And the older brother became so angry, he said, "My younger brother cut me off." Next morning, a carpenter knocked on his door, a man with a bucket of tools, and said, "I need some work. I don't have any work. Can you get me some work?" And the old farmer said, "I got just the job for you. I don't want to ever see the face of my younger brother again. I've got the wood in the barn. I want you to build me an 8-foot-high fence all the way across that where that creek is, and then I'm done." So he did. The older brother left, came back at the end of the day, and he pulls into the farmyard. No fence. What he sees instead is a beautiful bridge going right to his brother's farm. And as he gets out of his car and he goes and he walks to check the bridge out, he sees his brother running toward him with arms open and saying, "My lost brother, I can't believe you built this bridge for me. After all that I did to you, and you built this bridge. I can't believe it." And they embraced each other. And what's the moral of the story? The moral of the story to me is technology has built not bridges, high walls. You older parents in here like me thought you had a generation gap with your children? The generation gap is bigger today because parents many times don't know anything. Maybe you're the exception, but our young people know a lot more than we do, and they're not afraid to tell us they do. With technology, that wall became a lot higher. I'm suggesting we build a bridge with our young people first. We need to get our young people engaged. They need to see some of these facts. I know we don't want to know them, but we can't bury our head in the sand. We have to be aware of what it is. And then I end up with one couple sentences, and I'll stop. We know what the best filter is. It's not a man filter. But I went to many teacher conferences over my career at Plymouth Christian. And you go for 3 days, and your head feels like it's going to burst. You take notes and how to be a good teacher, how to be a good teacher, how to teach math, how to teach science. But I can remember at the end of one of the teacher conferences, it was in Alberta, Canada. We were all tired. It was on a Friday afternoon. And the pastor that did the closing said, "Teachers, for 3 days now, you heard a lot of information." And he read the very familiar story out of Daniel. And I never forgot that. He said, "Teachers, all the knowledge you learned these 3 days, there's one knowledge you need. Daniel. On his knees 3 times a day with his windows to Jerusalem." That's where I leave you today. I have failed as a parent. I failed. And I beg of you to think about that. If we are as Daniel, living that life of Daniel, more on our knees praying for our children, and then the church, school, the home, is that cord that is together. Because we as a consistory, we have no powers to do it. We can't do it. We feel that every time we have a meeting, as Reverend Vogelaar said. But that threefold cord, we need you, parents, and your children desperately need you. Ryan?
Just a couple closing slides I wanted to go through back again to our responsibility. But first of all, where can we find help? In your packet, there's a list of computer support places. We called, talked to them. They said certainly they would install filters. Bring your computer there, bring your device there. They'll install it for you. Very reasonable prices. The second thing we did is we set up an email address. You can email us on the committee, modernmediacommittee@gmail.com. We'll certainly do our best to answer your questions about filters, how they work, which ones we recommend, give you as much guidance as we can. Obviously, we can't really help with actually physically installing or, you know, maintaining or fixing your computer for you, but we'll do everything we can via email to try to respond to those emails. Now what I'm going to do is just, again, this is a summary and we put it in your report. So we talked about a lot of action items and we try to put these in order. Step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and I think we're up to 11. Seems overwhelming. Most of these are very simple, and once you do it once, you're done. Obviously the first one, as Uncle Dan said, have that discussion, build those bridges. Number 2, try to come up with a plan for a whole house filter. We recommended 2. If you can find other ones, that's fine, but it make sure that internet connection is blocked right where it comes into the house. Again, number 3, make sure you're using all your users are set up as standard users, not administrators, so they can't uninstall programs. Number 4, set up parental controls. Parental controls are already built into most of the computers and devices you have. You have a links page that's got instructions for every device. You also hopefully grabbed a handout. Again, if we ran out of handouts for your type of operating system, put your email address on the list and we'll email it to you. We'll email all the information from tonight to you. Number 5, Brad talked about Safe Search. Again, there's a link on the page that you can go to. Same thing with number 6, same thing with number 7, K9 and NetNanny were the recommended filters there. There's links to install files, user guides, quick startup. There's many people out there that are looking for the help, and most of these filters are set up very simply so that anybody can install them. Android devices get pretty complicated. If you're choosing a device, the iOS devices are probably a lot simpler to actually filter or block or turn off apps. But since many of us are using Android devices and we may not have a choice, here's some steps. Number one, install app lock. And I actually put the icon on there because there's a lot of app locks on the Play Store, but when you see that icon, that's the one we recommend, and you'll see it's also the most popular one. There's a couple million downloads of that one. And a catch with that one is, again, this is where it gets complicated. You need to make sure there's an advanced protection mode, that you need to go into the settings and you need to turn it on, because if you don't, the Android system is set up where everybody's an administrator. So you can uninstall any app at any time. You can take that app, you can basically just drag it to properties and click on uninstall and it's gone. There's really not a way to block that unless, as far as we can tell, I couldn't get past it, is the advanced protection. If you turn that on, you can't stop the app, you can't force close it, you can't uninstall it without having a password. The other thing that's nice about app lock is it allows you to disable every part of your phone. You can turn off settings, you can turn off every application on it. You can even block calls. You can say, I don't want any incoming calls, but I'll let outgoing, or you can, I don't know why you'd want to do that, but there's a lot of settings you can block in there. And then your next step is either twofold, either accountability or a filter on the phone. I would start with the filters. The filters, as we said earlier, are a little bit unstable. I personally tested NetNanny for a couple weeks. On my particular phone, it crashed a lot, and to the point where it was almost unusable. Many other people have very good luck with it. K9's also a very good browser to use. Now remember, on both of those, you need to disable the stock browser that comes with it, or Chrome, or any other browser that's on the device. That's why you need the app lock up in item A up there. If you come to the point where you really can't get the filters to work on the phone, then I would revert back to accountability and make sure that there's a report going to an accountability partner. Then you can use typically the stock app on the device. It typically won't be filtered, but at least you know that somebody will be getting a report on your activity. And then this is the last slide, a couple more devices. Again, like I said, iOS is a little simpler. There's a restriction setting, so you basically go to settings and general and then restrictions, basically three steps, and you put in a password, and then you're able to disable right in the operating system certain applications. You can disable Safari, which is the browser for iOS. And I would recommend for your children, leave the browser disabled. Do they need a browser on their device? Just leave it disabled. Don't put a filter on it. Don't even worry about the internet. Just not let them view web pages on that device. If you need internet, K9 and NetNanny both have a browser, the app that you can install on iOS. I haven't experimented with a lot, but I know that Barnes & Noble Nook, which is a book reading device, also has some parental controls. You can set up different users. Again, each one of these devices, if you look at your links page, the number on the links page relates to the action item. So if you look at the link for number 10, it should be instructions on how to set up parental controls for a Nook. And then number 11, just a reminder, make sure that all your devices need a password to access them. Make sure even your computers at home, they time out, and to get back in again, you have to put in a password so that if you're gone, your younger children know access it. So that is the end of our presentation for tonight. At this point, we'd like to open it up for questions, if there's any kind of general questions. We also encourage you afterward to come up here and talk to each of us. We have examples of most of the devices we talked about. We can quickly show you a few things on them if you have any questions. Yes, Tim.
If someone would go onto Google and try to search for something and it gives you 5 to 10 choices of what you might be thinking about, is that an easy setting to lock that off or no?
So the question is, if you go onto Google and you do a search, the search displays a bunch of sites that are related to that search, correct?
Questions or anything that you might be searching for.
What Brad had talked about was that's where the safe search comes in. Google actually has a safe search function that'll block those results that are objectionable. And again, you're depending on Google's determination of what's objectionable and what's not, but at least it's an attempt to allow you to search
and have some results that are not a problem. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Can you clarify how you put reporting on a mobile device?
There's a couple apps that you can do it. Covenant Eyes is one of them, we had mentioned. And again, on an Android device, it's complicated because you need to make sure that you have an app lock that won't allow them to disable. There's what they call a task manager in Android that you can go in and you can turn off, just stop any app that's running. You need something to prevent them from doing that. The other challenge I found with Covenant Eyes is it can only filter certain browsers or it can only log certain browsers. So you need to make sure you're using Chrome or the stock browser and you're disabling the other one. So there's a few steps that need to be taken. If you do a little searching about Covenant Eyes and read really well their manuals, they'll be able to guide you through that process. Yeah. Any other questions? Dan had mentioned here that we had talked to some of these stores, and they are, again, more than willing to take your device there and tell you, I want NetNanny installed for $30 or $40. They'll install it for you. They'll give you a few pointers on how to use it and take care of it for you. Don't feel like you have to do it yourself. Yes,
I have a question yet. I know that those are other churches, now rest of the state, probably.
Yeah.
Do you have any contact or discussions with, let's say, the Modern Media Group in, let's say, the East Jersey or other places, or did you work just for yourself? I would like to see this going out into the denomination, to the churches, to the ministers, districts.
Yeah. Very good question. The question was, have we contacted other churches, modern media committees, and looked at their research that they did? Yes, we did. We contacted Norwich, and they had also done a presentation, and they shared their information with us. We were able to glean a lot of good information from them. We didn't contact New Jersey. We tried to talk to Rock Valley. At that point, they hadn't really developed anything. We had some contacts with the RCNA congregation in Chilliwack, which we talked to them somewhat extensively because they had done the most work on it. But yes, we hope to continue that. We hope to continue working on it with other churches, and we also, that's why we're also trying to record tonight, both the slideshow and the video or the audio of us talking, so that we can also share that. That will be available also for people who weren't able to be here tonight. Anyone else have questions? Okay, well, at this point, we'll ask Elder and Sweden to come back up and
thank you, Ryan. At this point, I'd like to thank the members of the committee for all their work that was done. There's a lot of work that went behind this presentation, especially from three of the members. So I'd like to thank Brad, Dan, Dave, and Ryan, and also you for coming. At this point, we'll ask Andy Vandermeel to close for us.
Again, just shortly, would like to show appreciation for all the work, the time and the effort that was placed into something that really affects each and every one of us. For it comes not only to our children, but so many times it expressed to us and our children, which begins at home, which begins with the parents. But yet often it is also placed before us, the conclusion of the matter, fear God and keep his commandments. To depart from evil, that is understanding. That it may be bound to all of us as parents, but yet above all, that it may be placed in the heart of our children. Shall we try to ask the Lord for it?